Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Carla and her companions have begun to settle into the Abbey's daily routine. Chapter 20.
Closing time, my friends, the monk announced as he and a second monk entered the examination room. The evening meal awaits us. Rest your minds and nourish your bodies, that you may resume your work tomorrow.
Carla and Grievous met each other's gaze and shared a sigh as they pushed their chairs back and rose from the table. 30 feet away, at the opposite end of the room, Ali Fane and Benato did the same. The room was tall, over 20 feet high, and had no windows, at least none that anyone could look through. The top half of each wall was built with several narrow slits that let in some light, but their true purpose was to circulate the air for those in the room, as well as vent any smoke or fumes coming from the lamps mounted on the walls, panels of a light-hued wood which helped to spread the glow of the lamps about the room. Sturdy tables and chairs stained a darker color reminded Carla of the sort she'd seen on the ducal estate, although these lacked the duke's comfortable upholstery. Carla yawned and stretched, working out the knots in her back.
Dinner already? I keep losing track of time.
Grievous nodded in agreement as he and Carla stripped off the thin cloth gloves they were required to wear while handling any of the Abbey's resources and gave them to the monk who approached their table. The man opened a slender leather-bound folder, removing a single sheet of parchment. Then he turned to the first page in the volume Grievous had been examining and began to match the entries on his sheet with the individual maps in the volume. Grievous and Carla had been impressed by the way the maps were stored. Each volume was a hardbound collection of sheets of very thin, almost transparent paper that were actually larger than the cover of the volume itself. These individual pages were folded in on themselves, making envelopes, each containing a single map. This way, the maps were collected in a single volume, but did not directly touch each other, which was something the monks had been very insistent that Grievous and Carla avoid. 2 days ago, Grievous had complimented the monk who had brought them the first volume he had requested.
"I have only seen such fine paper once before," he had marveled, "in a book given as a gift from the Pajang of Komai to the Emperor. But Komai is on the other side of the Empire from here. How were you able to acquire this?"
"We create this paper ourselves, sir," the monk had replied, "though you are correct to mention Kalmai. Over a century ago, we were able to acquire a small amount of that paper, and since then we have endeavored to duplicate it with what materials we have available. 10 years ago we created this, and we use it for preservation and protection of delicate materials, such as these maps."
It was the same monk, Brother Marden, who now inspected the folio Grievous had been examining. Once he was satisfied that all the maps were accounted for, he noted the date and had Grievous sign his initials next to that entry on his sheet.
"Will you be returning tomorrow, Captain?" Marden asked.
"Yes," Grievous replied, sounding tired, "but I will not need to look at this volume again. I would like to see the next one in the series, if you please."
"It will be ready for you tomorrow," the monk promised, tucking the large volume under his arm.
"These maps are from many diverse collections," Grievous said, "but I have seen no imperial maps as of yet. How large is your collection of materials from my homeland?"
"Far less than we would like, sir," Marden said with a smile. "No maps, I'm afraid, but we do have a partial collection of Krelo's travels, several books of poetry, the plays of Nefera, all but one volume of Histories by Madurus. Those are the ones that I know off the top of my head, but there are a handful of smaller works as well."
"I see. Nothing of the physical sciences? The works of Trelia, perhaps?"
"Which Trelia, sir?" Marden replied.
He and Grievous shared a smile.
"We have 3 mathematical treatises by Trelia the Younger, and one of her books on astronomy, a particular favorite of Brother Hollum's, by the way, but I'm sorry to say nothing from her grandmother."
Grievous nodded. "Yes, I would have been very surprised to learn you possessed any of the works of Trelia the Elder. Even in the Empire, those are hard to find. Still, your collection is a good start, especially the plays of Nefera."
As they reached the exit, there was an awkward moment when they arrived at the same time as Allie and Benito. Allie, for her part, acted as if Carla and Grievous weren't even there, her frosty silence adding to the tension. Benito, on the other hand, gave them a sly smile.
"No luck, Captain. Which volumes did you look at today?" "Let us see how clever you are, Benito," Grievous responded. "I know that so far you have examined volumes 35 through 41, then 46, then 49 through 52.
His smile grew as Benito's faded.
"You have examined two volumes in their entirety today, so I will guess those would be volumes 53 and 54. Perhaps you can tell me how I know that."
As Benito sputtered for a reply, Allie sighed.
"He saw your signature on the inventory sheet, idiot," she said as she left the room, not bothering to look back.
Grievous chuckled and followed her out.
The examination room was an isolated structure in the center of a much larger space, a long hall with rows of bookshelves running the length of each side, rising up in three banister tiers linked by spiral staircases at regular intervals. During the day, whenever Grievous or Carla stepped out of the examination room to stretch their legs or use the lavatory, the place had been a quiet flurry of activity. Monks on every level, taking books off shelves, carrying them off to their own personal research projects, or putting them back. She even spotted Jordan once, pushing a wheeled cart past the shelves, returning some of these books himself. Carla sensed that if she stood still long enough, she'd be able to see the entire cycle of one book taken down, perused, and returned to its appointed place. At this hour, however, the hall was nearly empty, save for a cluster of four monks near one portion of the shelves, stripped down to tunics and pants, their robes laid out on a nearby table, setting up a scaffold and arranging construction equipment alongside several stacks of bricks that Carla hadn't seen there yesterday.
"What are they doing?"
"Renovations," Martin explained. "They work at night so as not to disturb the others during the day."
Benito slipped through the door behind them and trotted off after Allie. At a nearby table, Clegg rose from his chair with a groan.
"About time," the cook growled. "I'm starving."
"We will see you here tomorrow morning, sir," Brother Martin said as he locked the door of the examination room behind them, the other monk carrying away the two volumes and disappearing down a narrow corridor.
"Well, actually, I will not be seeing you. Tomorrow I am scheduled to work in the kitchens. But Sister Sharon," he said, gesturing toward the corridor the other monk had used, "will be glad to assist you."
"Of course," Carla said, waving farewell to Brother Martin, then leading Grievous and Clegg out of the hall.
"Don't we need him to guide us out of this maze?" Clegg asked.
"I've done this twice before now," Carla told him. "I know which way I'm going."
"You sure?"
the pirate chuckled when they reached an intersection, and Carla paused, looking in all directions.
"I think the Fane girl went another way, or we'd be seeing her pretty little backside somewhere ahead of us."
She sighed. "Trust me, Clegg. This is a different way than Allie uses. We're going through the Hall of Demons."
"The what?"
Clegg asked, taken aback, grumbling as Carla led them down one of the corridors. Carla took no small measure of satisfaction as she led them into the hall a few minutes later, both for her successful navigation through the building and for the looks of surprise and humor on both men's faces when they began to see all the little figures around them.
"Well, they're cute little buggers," Clegg said, peering at one that was on eye level with him. "They don't look half real. You sure you're not lost? I'd have remembered coming through here before."
"No, I'm just trying to get my bearings. Like you said, this place is a maze. I'm trying to get a sense of how it's laid out."
"Fair enough," Clegg admitted. "Besides, no chance of the Fane girl overhearing us now, right?"
"Quite right. That's the other reason I went this way."
"Smart lass. So, as we're alone, any luck today?"
"No," Carla sighed. "Not yet."
Clegg shrugged.
"Well, you know, I've seen a fair share of maps in my day. Who knows? Maybe if I took a look at yours, I might recognize something."
"Unlikely," Grievous said, looking down at another figure pressed against the base of a pillar, "as you will never get to see it."
He did not raise his head from his study of the statue.
It may have been the Left Hand's decision to bring you with us, but she does not decide who looks at the map."
Clegg bristled. "Just thought I might be able to help, that's all. But have it your way."
He looked at Carla.
"If you're done playing tour guide, lass, perhaps we can get down to dinner."
"Of course," Carla said, glad to change the subject. She turned on her heel, surveying the room, choosing her exit. "This way." Her navigation proved correct once more, and in a few minutes they came to a door leading outside, though they had to walk a quarter circle around the preservatory before they were on the path leading toward the high gate. Allie and Benito were well ahead of them, already passing through it. The dining hall was nearly full by the time they entered, but they had no trouble spotting Wick. Besides being one of the few not wearing the brown robes of the monks, he was sitting at the end of one of the long benches, not far from the door they entered.
"Just in time," he said, as Careless slid onto the bench next to him. "I don't know if they let latecomers in after they close the doors."
"Well, at least we won't find out tonight," she said, grinning as they heard the front doors boom shut. They stood up as the abbot and the senior staff entered, waiting patiently as the monks conducted their evening prayer. Wick waited until everyone had sat back down and the noise inside the hall had risen to a masking volume before speaking again.
"How'd it go?"
"Nothing new, I'm afraid. How about you?"
"More of the same as well," the guard said. "Took up my post on that bench just outside the door. Had a clear view of both gates, and no sign of Ali or Benito until they came down for dinner a little before you."
He jerked his head toward one corner of the dining hall.
"They're on a bench over that way, along with little Lord Broken Nose," he added with a smirk.
Carla gave an amused sigh at Wick's unwittingly accurate nickname for Jordan.
"What time did little Lord... I mean, what time did Jordan come down from the preservatory?"
Wick frowned.
"He didn't. Didn't see him at all today, until after Ali and Benito passed me and came inside here. Then I closed the books I was reading and came inside myself. He was already at the table, and they were sitting down to join him."
Now Carla frowned. "Really? That's odd."
"Why do you..."
Wick began, but he broke off as one of the monks placed two pitchers on the table, then gave each of them a mug. Carla smiled when she recognized Brother Hollam.
"So, this is your day in the kitchens."
"Yes, indeed," the monk replied. "I hope you'll like the meal."
He tucked the now empty tray under his arm, pausing before heading back to the kitchen.
"Actually, now that I've found you, I was wondering if you and your companions are free this evening."
"Free? For what?" Carla asked.
"I thought you might like to see the observatory," the monk said. "It promises to be a clear night, so I will be up there."
"Oh, I'd be delighted," Carla said. She looked at the others.
Grievous gave a polite smile, pouring water into his mug.
"I appreciate the offer, brother, but I think my knees have done enough climbing today."
"I'm with the Sabrian," Clegg said, helping himself to the beer. "Sad to say, but at my age, you start looking forward to an early turn-in."
"And if it's all the same to you, mistress, I'd be quite happy staying on the ground," Wick offered. "I'll go up there with you if you want, though."
Carla sighed, remembering Wick's dislike of heights.
"No, Wick, stay here if you like. Brother, I guess it's just the two of us."
"Very well," Hollam said with a smile. "Linger here in the hall after dinner. I will join you after we've cleaned up."
He nodded to the group, then headed back to the kitchen.
"Oh, I can't wait to see the view from up there," she said eagerly.
"I'm sure you'll enjoy it, mistress," Wick said, pulling the pitcher away from Clegg before the cook refilled his mug. "I'm sure it's vast," he added with a shudder.
He poured some beer for himself and Carla, then took a drink from his own mug.
"So, what was that you were saying about the boy, Jordan? That something was odd?"
"Oh, right. Well, what's odd is that I saw him in the preservatory this afternoon. I stepped out of the examination room for a break, and he was putting books back on the shelves."
"That's right. I saw him up there, too," Clegg chimed in. "So, how'd he get past you?"
he asked Wick.
"Maybe you were actually reading some of those books and stopped paying attention to who's coming and going."
"Don't you tell me my job, old man," Wick snapped. "It's no different standing watch here than on the Duke's estate. If I didn't see him, he wasn't there to be seen."
"But he sticks out like a sore thumb among this lot,"
Clegg pointed out, gesturing out toward the monks that filled the hall.
"With his height and those pretty locks fluttering in the wind, he's the next best thing to a flagpole. So, how'd we see him up there, but you didn't see him go past you?"
That's a good question, Carola said. Then, seeing Wick turn indignant, she quickly added, No, I'm not chiding you, Wick.
She glanced around, confirming that none of the monks were nearby, then leaned over the table and lowered her voice.
Maybe there's more than one way to get from the preservatory to the dining hall.
All three men paused, each one reacting differently to what she was implying. Wick was excited. Clegg was skeptically curious, but Grievous looked doubtful.
No, hear me out, she told him. He's nearly 18, and when you think about it, that means he's probably been here as long as many of the monks have, or even longer. And he does a lot of errands for the older ones, delivering messages or looking for various books in the archives. Seems to me that he'd have had the chance to explore every square inch of the Abbey by now. Who's to say he hasn't come across a few secrets?
Intriguing, Grievous admitted, but pure supposition. You have no evidence.
I do if I believe that Wick would have seen him come through the high gate, she said, nudging the young man's elbow with her own. Wick grinned at her, raising his mug to her before taking a drink. Since he didn't, I'm willing to bet that Jordan knows another way to get down here.
Grievous frowned, still dubious. You seem to know a great deal about this boy.
Oh, well, we talked a bit while he took me up to see the abbot, that first morning we were here.
Really? Clegg asked. The way he was looking at you that morning, wouldn't have thought he'd give you the time of day. He was following that Fane girl around like a puppy.
He winked at her.
How'd you pull that off?
Carola rolled her eyes. Stay focused, Clegg. If Jordan knows a secret way out of the preservatory and he tells Allie about it, then having Wick stay down here to keep an eye out for them may be pointless. They could slip right past him and be halfway to Maipur before we know it.
That brought a grim silence to their group, all three men nodding.
We need to find out what Jordan knows.
Seems to me that's your job, lass, Clegg said, and this time there was no mischievous gleam in his eye. However you got on speaking terms with him, maybe you can get him to tell you more. So, while you're chatting up the boy, what are the rest of us doing?
Carola smiled at Clegg, glad to see him contributing to the conversation rather than just needling Grievous and Wick. She turned to Grievous.
I'd still like one of us with you while you're examining the maps. Allie and Benito will be in the room too, and the monks only come by periodically to check on how you're doing. They have motive. Why give them extra opportunity?
Grievous nodded, looking at Wick.
Perhaps you would like to join me, Fraterno Bellum. If you believe there is no way that young man could have walked past you, then there is little reason for you to remain down here on watch.
I suppose, Wick said, glancing at Carola for approval, but how will we know if they make a break for it?
That'll be my job, Clegg announced.
He gestured at Grievous.
You won't let me see the bloody map, and, well, can't say as I blame you.
He moved his hand toward Carola.
And you'll be chatting up that pretty boy to see if there's another way out of that maze. I'm just growing barnacles sitting in that library, watching them monks go back and forth. But I earn my keep, so I tell you what, I'll keep watch down in Lowgate. Secret passages or no, Allie and Benito will have to go through there when they leave. They're not like to scamper back to Maipur without their weapons and horses. Besides, there's folk doing actual work down there, and I never met someone who turned down a volunteer to help with chores. I can stay busy and keep a lookout at the same time.
He shrugged.
I'm no young man to go running all the way up to the preserva, whatever you call it, but I can start moving the moment I see them leaving, so they won't get much of a head start on us. Better than nothing.
Carola beamed at him. Clegg, that's a great idea.
She looked up, seeing another monk approaching, carrying a tray laden with food, and her stomach started to rumble.
Starting tomorrow, that's what we'll do.
We need to turn a bit more to the west, Hollum told Carola. Rotate the telescope another 2 degrees counterclockwise, if you please.
2 degrees counterclockwise, aye, Carola replied, falling back on her habits as a sailor as she slowly began to turn the heavy metal crank.
The Abbey's telescope was the largest one she'd ever seen. Looking more like a small cannon to her, it was over 4 feet long and nearly a foot across at the wide end, and it was mounted on a wooden platform built several feet above the roof of the observatory tower. the circular center of the platform was separated from the rest by an inch-wide gap and sat above an assembly of gears that rotated in a full circle when turned by the metal crank. Along both edges of the gap, the wood had been rimmed with bronze, and slender increments had been etched into both rims with precise measurement, breaking 360 degrees into quarter-degree increments. The outer rim was also marked with arrows, noting the points of the compass. As Carla turned the crank, she watched the increments slide past, locking the crank in place when she'd reached the new position.
2 degrees counterclockwise, she announced.
Thank you, Hallam said, glad to have someone helping him.
He stepped onto the center platform and bent down, looking into the viewfinder.
How are you able to see through it from that angle? She asked.
Mirrors, the monk answered. As I get older, I offer more prayers and thanks to the memory of my friend and mentor, Brother Arbus, who came up with the idea and designed this attachment to the viewing lens. Far easier on my back this way.
I can imagine, Carla said. So this telescope was built at the Abbey.
Hallam adjusted the telescope's angle, pointing it higher in the sky, then looked through the viewfinder again.
All except for the large lens.
Where did that come from?
Hallam picked up a clipboard next to the telescope and wrote down the new settings for the instrument.
We have been able to grind smaller lenses for some time here, but a lens of that size we commissioned a craftsman in Malachi to make. He had never done anything that large either, but he was a master of his craft, and he liked the challenge. Part of our arrangement with him was that one of us would work with him on the lens, as an apprentice of sorts.
He looked back at her.
That was my job. I helped Francois make that lens with my own hands, and when I returned to the Abbey, I had both the lens and the knowledge of how to build it.
So now you could make a new lens here if you needed to, Carla said.
Not just me. That knowledge, all my notes and illustrations, are in the archives. Anyone could build their own lens if they wished. All it would take is time.
He paused.
And near infinite patience. You've no idea how many times Francois and I had to start over from scratch.
He glanced up at the telescope and smiled.
I have begun to design a larger telescope, something that will provide even greater detail, but I have a great deal more planning to do before construction begins, and there is much out there that this old girl still has to show me.
He looked into the viewfinder again and made one more adjustment.
Take a look.
Carla eagerly stepped up and bent over the viewfinder. The moon, half full, leapt into her gaze, so large, so detailed, that she gasped aloud.
Daughter's love, but that's pretty. I've had a chance to look through Grievous's telescope, and that Sabrian made, but this, oh, this!
She stared avidly at the image, getting lost in the details. Then she lifted her head.
It's amazing, brother. So beautiful. Thank you for inviting me up here.
Well, if you're going to help me get it into position, you should get a reward for your efforts, the monk said, delighted at her reaction. Tonight's work, however, is not the moon. Tonight I am taking observations of the Saber constellation. If you would be so good as to help me set the platform's position again?
10 minutes later, the telescope was in a new position, and Hallam was peering through it at a cluster of stars not far from the southern horizon.
In the Saber Empire, that constellation is high overhead, Hallam said to Carla. They are the ones who gave it the name we use today. Most of the constellations in the southern sky have names first used in the Empire. Did you know that?
No, I didn't, Carla called back.
She was leaning against the short stone wall, looking down at the Abbey far below. Her mind spun, delighted and dizzy from the height. The illumination from the lamps below seemed to create islands floating in the darkness. If the lamps were close enough, the islands were archipelagos, and if they were even closer, the edges of their light mingled, making larger land masses. Midgate had the most light. There were lamps set equidistantly along the main paths, like bridges through the darkness, linking the church to the dining hall to the dormitories, and the dormitories to the bathhouse. The pattern of lights reminded her of a king's scepter, a rod topped by a diamond. She grinned. Both Hallam and I are looking at constellations. Then she spotted movement near the men's dormitory. She squinted, trying to locate it again, and saw a small group of people heading toward the bathhouse. they stayed off the path under the cover of the trees, which piqued Carla's interest all the more. And then she realized something. "Brother Hallam," she asked.
"Hmm?"
the monk replied, sounding as if he was still looking through the telescope. "It's after curfew, isn't it? How is it we're allowed up here?"
"Well, it's curfew for anyone who isn't engaged in work that has to be done at night. My calling requires it, for example, and those who are doing renovations in the archives are another. And you're with me, so that's all right as well."
"I see," Carla said, still watching the figures moving toward the bathhouse. As they crossed an open space between two trees, she saw that there were three of them. "Three?" she thought, a sinking feeling coming over her. "Oh no, what are those boys up to now? Grievous or Clegg might have come up with some plan to sneak around, but I can't imagine Wick letting them go, much less tagging along." Then she noticed a swirling motion around one of the three figures and realized that it was a monk's robe. A monk and two others. Could it be Allie and Benito? Then as the group passed closer to a lamp, she picked up another detail. Both of the men accompanying the monk had dark skin and shaved heads. "Well, well, I guess Drusus isn't turning in early at night," she mused with a half-smile, watching the scholar and his servant follow the monk up to the door of the bathhouse and slip inside. As she watched the now-still grounds below her, wondering what Grievous would make of all this when she told him about it tomorrow, she noticed someone else move out from behind a tree, crossing the grounds toward the bathhouse. "It appears I'm not the only one curious about what Drusus is doing." She waited for the figure to move into a patch of light, but he was more furtive, staying in the shadows until he was very close to the bathhouse.
"Carla?"
Brother Hallam called.
"Just a moment," she replied. "Come on, come on."
"We need to rotate the platform a few degrees," the monk said. "The constellation's nearly out of view now."
"Be right there," she called back.
Then for an instant, the figure was out in the open, scampering between two trees, and it was enough for Carla to recognize him. "Benito," she thought, turning away from the wall to join Brother Hallam.
"Another degree and a half, I think," Hallam said.
"Degree and a half," she repeated, unlocking the crank handle and rotating the platform, then locking the handle down again as soon as she had reached the desired position.
Hallam immediately looked through the viewfinder, adjusting the telescope's angle.
"Back one quarter," he called.
Carla was already halfway back to the wall, desperate to see what Benito was up to, but she spun back on her heel with an impatient noise, returning to the crank.
"Back one quarter, aye."
The monk watched her as she made the minute adjustment.
"I'm sorry if you find this tedious."
"Tedious?" Carla asked.
"The stars wheel overhead, and we must constantly adjust the telescope to keep them in view. I should have explained all that from the start."
Carla was abashed.
"Oh, no, brother, not at all. I was a sailor for years. I know all about the stars' movement. It's just... I'm sorry, I was..." She trailed off. "I was lost in my own thoughts. Not your fault."
The monk sighed and gave an understanding nod.
"Up here, this close to the stars, one's thoughts may travel far. Even on cloudy nights, I often come up here for the solitude and the quiet. I like having company as well at times, but I did not ask you up here to be my assistant. I can do the work myself, if you'd prefer."
"No," Carla said, Hallam's expression making her feel guilty. "Benito surely reached the bathhouse and gone inside by now anyway. Nothing more to see down there. Now that I have a better sense of what's required, I'm glad to help you, brother. I like having someone around to talk to as well when I'm working, to share ideas with. So talk about whatever you'd like. I know the stars as well as any sailor, but you get a lot closer to them than I do, and I'd like to hear more."
Hallam smiled.
"Very well, mistress."
He checked the telescope again, then stepped away from it and gestured for her to take a look.
"Let us begin anew."
This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the frieze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.